Hello, Catherine here. If you're listening to my podcast because you're a fan of wintering, the good news is that my new book, Enchantment, is available now. It's a book about how we can find a way to reconnect with a world that's sometimes hard to live in and even to find magic there. It's available in all good bookshops and please support your local indie if you can. For more information, you can go to catherine-may.com/enchantment. Happy reading.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm out in Bleam Wood. It's really wet underfoot. There comes a point every winter where the whole wood just gets covered in water at one end. It's extraordinary the way it happens. The wood itself is full of little channels that presumably were once dug a long time ago, but which now drain the wood really efficiently. But there comes a point when the rain gets too heavy and everything is absolutely underwater for acres of woodland. It's amazing how the wood adapts. We're approaching midwinter now, the darkest time of the year and increasingly my favourite time of the year. I love that pause at the end of the shortest day. That moment when you feel the year turning and something else coming through. It's this beautiful quiet moment in the year, if you let it happen, if you notice it. I never used to notice it. And now I know it's here. I look forward to it. I'll be lighting a fire, spending some quiet time with some friends. And the next morning I'll get up and watch the sunrise and feel that peace. Anyway, I love the woods at this time of year. All of that water fills them, fills the gaps between the trees with these enormous puddles that are black because of the quality of the soil underneath. Years and years of leaf mulch all gathered up together. And so the woodland becomes full of black mirrors, perfectly reflecting the trees. It's so beautiful. I don't know why more people don't talk about this stuff. So I'm so excited this week to have Cheryl Strayed on the podcast, one of my writing heroes. I was so thrilled when she said yes, when I asked her. It's just, some writers just really touch you, I think. You know, she's a walker like I am. I read Wild before I embarked on my big walk that I undertook for the electricity of every living thing. But it's not just that. I love the earthiness that she writes with. The sincerity, the commitment, the rawness. I just feel like she's a writer that you get contact with unquestionably. I was rereading some of her Dear Sugar letters in advance of this. I always like to read people just before I talk to them. And if you haven't read them, do pick them up. But there's something extraordinary about the way she addresses these people who come to her for help. And I just sat there crying, tears streaming down my face. I just love the way she dances with language. Anyway, that's enough puff from me. But I hope you'll enjoy the interview. So thrilled to have been able to do it. And I'm just walking past some beautiful chestnut trees covered in white lichen. The whole wood feels almost monochrome today. It's such a pleasure to come out here at this time of year and to think. So I'm going to do some thinking. Hope you enjoy the interview. Cheryl, welcome. It's amazing to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here.
It's great. I've been a huge fan of your work for a long time, but I don't know if you know, my previous book to Wintering was called Electricity of Every Living Thing, and it was me taking a long walk. And when I was planning the book, I picked up Wild again. And then got this terrible fear because it's like, oh God, she finished the walk and I didn't. Like, A, it was a harder walk.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't read that book. I didn't know about that book. I'm gonna race out and get it after we're done talking. You know, but that's funny though, Catherine, because I think I feel when I read Wintering, I was like, okay, we're kindred spirits. I identify with you a lot. But here's the thing. There really is no such thing, right? Like I finished, quote unquote, you didn't finish, quote unquote. But I think that, you know, a walk is an ongoing process. And there's no such thing really as finishing or not finishing. It's one foot in front of the other and come what may.
It's all you can do. And like you merge with your walk. You are the walk after a while. It's not about destination. It's not about miles. It took me a long time to figure that out, though, that actually it's the rhythm almost of keeping going. That's all the walk is.
Absolutely. And I think that there are so many reasons why I love walking, not just in my own life, but, you know, as an activity in the world that lots of people get to do. Is there is that you're always running your own race. In fact, it's not a race. Yeah. I've had so many conversations with people who, of course, have gone and hiked some long wilderness trail after they read Wild. They were inspired to take some big journey. But more importantly, I have talked to people who said, I didn't dare walk a mile or a kilometer by myself before I read your book. And now I do. Yeah. And so those are, you know, that can be as wild and adventurous, that first time you go on a walk alone, as any wilderness trek.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, actually, there was this thing that happened to me just before I started Electricity that never made it into the book, but it inspired the book, which was that I'd gone for a little walk one day, just a little stroll after work, and I parked my car at the edge of the woods, and there was an older guy parked in his car in the car park. And as I got out, he wound down the window and called me over. And, you know, very naively, I went over and said, oh, hi, you're okay. And he said, if I were you, I wouldn't do that. And I said, what? Sorry. And he said, like, a girl like me, God, I was like 40, for God's sake, but a girl like you on your own, you know. And it was so creepy. And there was a bit of me that wanted to defiantly just go into the woods anyway and walk because it was my place to walk in. But of course I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I just obediently got back in my car and drove off because I was scared. Mm-hmm. And I think there is, I mean, I know you had a really intimidating incident along the trail as well.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the things I want to say is it's kind of unusual, isn't it? Most of the time when I'm walking alone, I feel completely unthreatened. I don't know if that's the same for you.
Yeah. I mean, the scenario that you present, the experience you had, it really is complicated because in so many ways, obviously he was creepy and I would have been afraid too. It would have, you know, made me back up. And yet he's in so many ways speaking with the voice of the culture. Mm. We were both raised in cultures that said, women shouldn't do things alone. Women shouldn't certainly venture into the wilderness alone or walk alone. I mean, that really is one of the first messages I think girls receive when they figure out, like,
loud and clear.
Don't go by yourself in the world. And I thought about this a lot when I decided to take my hike on the Pacific Crest Trail, because I knew, you know, from step one, I was breaking a deeply, deeply held code of the culture. Or a rule for girls and women, because, you know, don't go alone because something bad could happen to you. And then it's kind of your fault. And I rejected every layer of that. And I decided that I had to really reckon with my fear and confront that thing you had to confront. Do I go or do I get back in my car and drive away? And of course, there are many times that I've said, no, I am too afraid. I won't do it. But in the case of that summer when I decided to hike the PCT, I just decided I wasn't going to let fear be the thing that ruled me. And part of what kept part of the way I kept myself safe is another thing you say, which is once you're out there, you know, you feel perfectly safe. And the scary times, the scary places, honestly, are the places that we encounter men. And I hate to say this, it's the parking lots, it's the intersections. And of course, I love men. I'm not, you know, I know a lot of men would never harm anyone. No. But it is also true that
there's a percentage.
Are men who harm women. And it's scary. It's a complicated thing about going alone.
It is. And as you say, you're quite right. It is the parking lots that are the scary bits. You know, when you walk through those little pieces where everyone's parked and maybe there's a tea hut or a pub, they're the bits when you have your hackles up straight away. Mm-hmm. And I mean, over and over again, what struck me, I was on the Southwest Coast Path in Devon, was that I saw so many women walking alone there and it was glorious, you know, and we'd nod to each other as we passed and that would be it. Like nobody wanted to stop and talk. Like everyone was there just to walk and to be alone in their own heads. And my guess is that everyone was processing something different. I certainly was.
Yeah. I mean, do you find, you know, sometimes I'll go on a walk I walk every day, but sometimes I'll go on a walk when I'm trying to work out a problem. Mm. But even when I'm not, by problem, I don't mean a trouble necessarily. Sometimes it's really just in my writing life, you know, right? Yeah. Actually walking is part of my writing life. I find that I'll write something and purposely say, okay, now I'm going to walk for a half hour because I know that new ideas will come to me, right? But even if I go out there just because I want to get some exercise, what inevitably happens is, you know, I start to think about things that I need to think about. That you know, this is the way that I think walking is so healing, is you don't even really have to try. You know, in Wild, I very much... anyone who has read the book or seen the movie knows that I really did go on that hike because my life was in crisis.
Yeah.
And I needed in some ways to try to heal myself or find myself again. But what I always say is, you know, you could also go hike that trail not looking for any kind of transformation and you're going to get it anyway.
You'll get it anyway.
You know, even if you're not seeking it.
I know. I think it opens up this incredible space. And I mean, like you, I walk every day, but I take short walks. But it's those longer walks that I need to really, empty my head. Like, I think the thing about walking is it gives you those revelations, but it gives you them slant-wise. You don't get them directly. You don't get to think it through, like, really deliberately. They kind of drop into your head after about 3 hours. And when everything feels empty And I don't know anything else that does that. You know, I'm a meditator, but walking takes me somewhere further than that sometimes, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've never succeeded at meditating, and perhaps because I've hardly tried it, you know, but I'm not drawn to it. It's funny because when people read my work as Dear Sugar, which in case you or your listeners don't know, it's an advice column, a very unorthodox advice column that I write.
Oh, we will be talking about that in a minute. Don't you worry.
Oh, okay. And, you know, people, all the advice I give, I'm very often suggesting, you know, mindfulness practices, essentially. And yeah. So I think people have this image of me that I'm always, you know, every day I sit and do my, you know, meditation. But what I do is walking meditation.
Yeah.
And that to me, and you know, the reason I have never been drawn to meditation is I just hate the idea of having to just sit there and say, okay, I'm going to empty my mind. But somehow I can do that if I'm moving.
No, you're doing it. You're doing it already. I mean, a meditation is so different to what I thought it was. And I rarely sit and meditate anymore. I used to, you know, do the whole thing of like 20 minutes twice a day. I was absolutely religious about it. And that broke for loads of reasons, you know, and one of those was motherhood. I mean, my son's 9 now. I still don't get 20 minutes twice a day of the peace that I would need to be uninterrupted and to be able to shut myself in a room. You know, somebody would come in. I would love to say that they couldn't. But, you know, I find loads of different ways to just make some space, I think. And I actually prefer it that way. I like the improvisation of it. I like the informality. I like that feeling of going with what your gut wants on that day. I think it's taken me all my lifetime to tune into my gut. And I cling to that now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm always struck by what a difference it makes if you can do even sort of micro mindfulness, I guess, where even just when you were talking just now, I was listening to you and I consciously took a deep breath. And even just that, I was like, oh, I feel better. I feel better. I took a deep breath. I took a moment to pause and tune into my body. And I think that is the goal of mindfulness. And it really gives us so much if we just spend a tiny bit of time on it each day.
It's amazing how easy it is not to breathe, isn't it? That endlessly fascinates me. Like how often I think, oh, I'm not breathing right now. I'm just, you know, slowly asphyxiating in my own fear.
Yeah. Have you read that book, Breathe? It maybe came out a year or so, two ago.
I haven't. It's on my list. Yeah, no, it looks great. James Nestor.
Me too. It's on my shelf. Yes, it's right here. I'm looking at it right now and I've been meaning to read it, but I'm too busy to breathe. So how can I read a book about breathing?
I'm a bit scared of it though, because I went to see a heliotropic breath work person once. Have you ever come across one of those?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, okay. So what they do is, oh my God, I can't believe I'm admitting to this. What they do is they make you lie down on a couch and essentially like you breathe in this pattern that's a bit like hyperventilating. And the idea is that eventually your body takes on the rhythm that you force on it. And it's supposed to kind of be almost slightly psychedelic. It's supposed to bring around like revelations. It's supposed to heal trauma. It's supposed to release held stuff. Okay. I was like the worst subject he's ever worked with. You could just feel this guy getting like more and more frustrated. And after a while, he like made me put like the top end of a bottle that he'd cut off in my mouth to try and like help me to hold the form. And still I couldn't. And then after, I just sort of realized that I was basically dribbling out of this bottle. And anyway, an hour in, I was like, I don't think this is going to work. And I had to leave. But I hated the feeling. All of my friends had been to see him and thought he was just a magician and he'd like released all this stuff for them. And I came in resistant and I went out resistant again.
Is it kind of like, I've done some, I mean, it sounds like it's a bit different, but sometimes in yoga, there's this.
Oh, like pranayama.
I'm forgetting the name of it now, but you know, that you have to go. It's kind of like you're forcing your breath out really hard, you know, in a rapid fashion.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. Yeah.
And I find it to be, it's like fire breathing or something. I find it to be really uncomfortable. I'm like, no, that's just not for me.
Yeah, I did not like it.
I'll do it, but I'm like, let's get this over with. Yeah. Okay.
And ever since then, like, don't ever do it. I'm not recommending
I'm never going to do it. But I will read the, I will read the book. The book. Is it Breath or Breathe? I don't remember.
I actually don't know. And I'll check it and put it in the show notes. Because I think it's published by my same publisher, actually. So they're probably listening to this, rolling their eyes. But yeah. And so ever since then, like, any kind of hint of breath work, my body's like, no, no, we are not doing that again. Like, no way. Uh-uh. Oh, it's making me breathe funny just saying that. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I'm going to take a breath. But yeah, actually, you know, talking about this, it takes me back to that idea of when we walk and how we walk. There's something about gut instinct for women, like when you choose to do that and when it feels safe and when it feels okay. And maybe that's no bad thing. Like, maybe having a practice that tunes you into when you're safe and when, for whatever reason, you don't feel safe is better than, like, marching through life and not ever knowing.
Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely that those mindfulness practices contribute to our sense of well-being in part, because I guess it's about reading your body, trusting your intuition, all those senses that are hard to define or express. Yeah. Another thing for me, though, and I think this was really actually key in my life. Well, first of all, I grew up in a rural environment. And so I wasn't somebody who felt like the wilderness was a scary and dangerous and forbidding place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually felt that way about the city when I went to college. I was terrified. I was like, I'm going to be, you know, stabbed on the street on the first day or something. You know, I was like scared about that. And so some of that is like to familiarize yourself with the landscape, you know, that you want to walk in, whether it be city or country or wilderness. But the other thing too is I have never been drawn to scary movies, scary stories. I've really seen very, very few, like, you know, of those kinds of things. And I actually think that was a good thing when it came to me deciding to walk alone, because I am the type of person who's like, you know, if I've seen a million movies where some woman is alone in a tent and then suddenly, you know, some terrible beast comes slashing through, you know, that's going to play in my mind when I'm alone in a tent. So it was really helpful to me.
I am exactly the same.
So I'm like, you know, be careful of what you expose yourself to. And of course, there are all these people out there listening who will be like, oh, you know, I love scary movies. My daughter, for example, just loves scary things. But I do think that you have to, if you're going to take that stuff in, find a way to really put that aside and realize it's fiction. Not that scary things don't happen in real life, but that you can play those movies in your head in a way that keeps you from doing things.
Yeah. And I feel like I don't want to dwell on that side of life. And in fact, about 10 years ago, I realized that watching TV drama before bed was keeping me awake. Like, not just because I was scared, although sometimes it was because I was scared, but other times it was like, it was just overstimulating. I was so excited by the story or kind of my head was still in it and I couldn't sleep. And so I stopped watching it. And then after that, there was no real reason to watch TV much, to be honest, because I wasn't really following anything. And so now I don't watch TV very much. And when I tell people that, they're a little bit affronted, like I'm judging them or, you know, like it. And there's no judgment there. It's literally that I realized that it really wasn't all that good for me to watch those series that everyone else finds so compelling. I don't think I can quite handle it. It's just I'm a bit of a flower about it, really. It just gets in my head.
And you find that doesn't happen with books that are really capturing your interest. Is that right?
Every now and then. I mean, I do read nonfiction more than fiction, and I think probably that's easier to set aside mostly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, every now and then there's a novel that I have to sit up and see the whole thing through. I just can't ever put it down. But yeah, no, it's something about TV that, do you know what it is? I think I don't understand how the storytelling works, and I'm always trying to figure it, like, my writer's brain can't leave it alone. I'm like, well, how do they make this work? Because I don't really get what a script does, and like, what's this character doing? And I'm still trying to unravel it at 2 o'clock in the morning when I like really, really need to be asleep.
Yeah, I'm constantly struggling with that particular issue with sleep. Not so much in relation to television, but really anything that sparks my interest, or that I have on my mind. And I think that this is a common plight for women in middle age, just the shutting off there should be like an off button on our brains. And, I don't know if you find it, please let me know. Cause I would really like to press it each night at about 11
Cheryl,
o'clock.
And I have not found it. That's not a plot spoiler.
Well, if we found it, we would get very rich very quickly.
We would. There must be something. I've been writing about this lately because, like everybody else, I've suffered really badly from brain fog this year. And, part of me was paranoid that it was my old lead pipes I had replaced. But, everyone had a different explanation. And some people said it was COVID and some people said it was menopause. And I'm sure it was all of those things. But I can't help but think that as a middle-aged woman, I'm holding so much in my brain all the time. And it's no wonder it's all foggy because I'm I've got this stupid, minute to-do list that never goes down and never diminishes. And yeah, everything's got jumbled.
Yeah. I think one of the things I said, I used to do a podcast called Dear Sugars with Steve Almond, and we were discussing the emotional labor that's put on most women in households, especially with kids. And I was telling a story about how my husband, who's just like an incredibly, we have this very egalitarian marriage and he's, he does more of the cleaning than I do and more of a lot of things, we're very equal, right? And yet it's still true that I'm the one, all the information is in my brain, all the necessary information. And he will go to the grocery store and text me, constantly from the grocery store. Do we need this? Do we need that? Should I get this? Should I get that? And I got angry with him at one point and he said, well, just give me a list. I just need a list. And I said, that's the difference between you and I. You need a list and I am the list.
I'm the human list.
I am the list. And people had t-shirts made for me that said, I am the list. And I think that is it, is of course, some men listening to this will relate to it as well. So I don't mean to be, excluding. Sure. But I do know a lot of women, especially women who are also mothers, who feel this way, who they carry around. You and I have big careers that keep us very busy.
Busy.
I know. Yeah. Just a wee bit. and we still carry around when do the kids need to go to the dentist, the doctor? When do they need to do everything. Their school stuff? When is this? And what do we need? And did you get the boots for this? And then all the gear and the food and the, social calendar, all that stuff. It feels overwhelming. So it's interesting when people talk about brain fog, you say you had brain fog. And and what I can't tell for myself is if either A, I don't have brain fog, B, I have brain fog, but my brain is so foggy, I don't even know I have it. or C, it's like, I've always been this way. Maybe I was born into a constant state of brain fog. I have no idea. But I don't feel that my brain feels different during this pandemic. I feel utterly exhausted and overwhelmed. And so maybe that's the same thing as brain fog.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm just taking a pause to let you know about my very exciting new Patreon feed.
If you love the Wintering Sessions and would like to help it grow, you can now become a patron. Subscribers will get an exclusive monthly podcast in which I talk about the books, culture, and the news that are currently inspiring me. You'll also get the chance to submit questions to my guests in advance of recordings, and the answers will go into a special extended edition of the podcast that only patrons receive, and a day early too. Plus, you'll get discounts and early booking links to my courses and events, and your podcast will always be ad-free. If this sounds like your kind of thing, I have a special offer. The first 30 patrons will be able to join at a discounted rate of $3 a month for life. So do get in early and help to build the community from the foundations. Go to patreon.com/Catherine May or follow the link in my bio to subscribe. And please don't worry if this isn't for you. The regular version of the Wintering Sessions will still be free, and I really appreciate your listens. Now, back to the show. Tell me, what has the pandemic period been like for you? How's it been?
It's been awful. It's been honestly a very difficult time in my life, because when the pandemic hit, I have two teenagers. My daughter was 14. She's 16 now. My son had just turned 16. So they're teenagers. They're you know, in 9th and 10th grade now. They're really in the heart of their teenage years. And, you know, they were moving from middle school into high school at the time that the pandemic hit. And now it's been long enough that they're like, okay, it's a couple of years later. And to watch them struggle and to struggle with them, to have them during a time in their lives that they're really meant to be out and about with their peers and having all kinds of social experiences. And
that incidentally involved touching each other too. Like, that's such an important part of being a teenager.
Like, really, and like sexual experiences. I mean, you know, your first kiss or whatever that didn't happen because you had to always be 6 feet apart from somebody. I mean, they, you know, and they had online school for more than a year, and then now they're back in school, but they have to wear masks all day, which I agree with. Like, I'm pro, you know, wear the masks and be safe. And yet I think, okay, well, what's it like? You know, they're so glad to be back in school, but, you know, they have half of their faces covered. And this is just really, I think this pandemic has been most difficult on adolescents and probably people in their young 20s too, but certainly teenagers. That's already a hard time in life. And so to put that on them. And so, yeah, there have been all kinds of struggles that have happened with my kids that have been, I've had to parent in such an intensive way. It's like having toddlers again in a strange way in terms of the time I've needed to take to really mother. And so that's been hard and sad.
And like helping them to process that, something that we're all struggling to process ourselves. Like, what, how do you put it into context for them? I mean, my son's younger, he's 9. And he said to me a couple of months ago, like, I don't remember life before the pandemic. I, you know, I've got a vague idea, but this is normal to me. And it kind of broke my heart. Like, what are you, what does that mean for him? Like, what effect does that have in the long term? And what developmental stuff has been missed? And
I think we don't know yet, but it's going to be something. And the way too that it's now, it's just going on and on and on. I was just, before we started this conversation, I was doing a little bit of online Christmas shopping. My daughter sent me a list, and one of the things on her list were these really cute masks that she found on Etsy that I was buying for her. And I realized, oh, okay, like, masks now are just like, they're, you know, you need a shirt and you need pants and you need socks and you need a mask. You know, I just, it's become like this way of life has gone on long enough now that it's become strangely normalized, which is,
it really has,
kind of heartbreaking to me.
And what does that mean? I mean, I also think that they've shown incredible resilience, and they've had the opportunity to show resilience that they would maybe not have been called for before. And I do think it's done some really good things for my son. I don't think that's true for all kids, but he has, as like an only child who's maybe, you know, used to getting a lot of attention and used to being the center of every story, it has made him more aware of other people. And, you know, I think there are some positives, but I am not willing to pretend that this is, you know, a good outcome for anyone. It's just grim. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's all kicking off again at the moment is even grimmer.
Yeah, let's pretend that's not true. Just for another day or two.
yeah. Let's. By the time this is broadcast, though, like, we're going to be deep into it again. Or maybe not. Maybe it'll all blow over not. And we'll be fine. Maybe.
This is all just a dream. We're waking up from the dream. The brain fog is lifting.
Do you know what? My brain fog is finally lifting. I have to say, it was a very distinct period. And as life has got more normal again, the fog has cleared. But there was a long time when I couldn't read, you know, I couldn't like focus on anything. I was just constantly distracted and looking over my shoulder. And that just felt like a huge loss amid all these other losses. It was like, I didn't need to lose reading as well. Thank you very much. My comfort was gone. It's a funny time. Hmm. But so, I mean, you're an advice giver. Like, that's what you're completely amazing at. And that's your, I mean, would you see it as a calling? It feels like it from the receiving end.
That's interesting. Well, you know, I think of writing as my calling. And what happened when I took on the Dear Sugar column and found that, like, wow, you know, this is, I can do this. This is something that I really, you know, I committed myself deeply. I gave full throttle to that endeavor, you know, and it was what surprised me is it did seem, yes, okay, so writing's my calling, but then this particular style of writing, these epistolary exchanges I have with people who write to me for advice, and my responses aren't just, you know, do this and do that, like, you know, sort of the typical agony aunt style, but rather essays on life and essays on what it means to be human. Yeah, in some ways it's almost like a crystallized or distilled form of my writing, which, you know, I think in my other work, in my other books, I'm not writing them to give people advice, but you can find truth and meaning and inspiration the way we do in reading any book, really.
Yeah.
But I guess in some ways, in Tiny Beautiful Things, my book that is the Dear Sugar collection, you know, yeah, maybe it's my highest calling. That's a good way to put it.
Well, what I love about it, I think, is, I mean, A, the kind of earthiness of your voice. It's so human. It's never superior. It's never like, it's never coming from a place of knowledge that's being handed down. It's co-storytelling, which always feels to me like how we give advice in real life. We exchange it, we flow it between us. But I think that's in lots of way what your writerliness gives you. You tell a story and those stories have you in them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I started doing that because story is the thing that has been most consoling to me, most transformative to me. Yeah. When I have felt the lowest or the most confused or the most alone, I turn to books and I find myself there, or not necessarily myself. I find that meaning there, that the human experience. I find myself feeling connected to people across all divides. And so I try to offer that via telling stories about myself in the Dear Sugar column.
Yeah. But that seems to me where your mindfulness resides as well. Like, you're truly listening to people, but you're also like unashamedly giving a response. You know, you're not kind of doctoring it to, you know, sanitize it or make it feel kind of safe or make it feel like it's done by committee. You tell it fairly straight.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you write to me, you're going to get it intimate and raw. And I mean, and by raw, I mean, obviously I labor over every sentence and every word and think deeply about it all. But I mean, raw in terms of unvarnished, that is simply my style. It's my style a person, and it's my style as a writer too. In whatever I'm writing, I've always found it most important to be as direct and plain spoken as possible. You know, also poetic, but in a pretty in a pretty straight way. Yeah.
Truth telling. Yeah. And that kind of directness. And so, I mean, have you had an upswing in people writing over this time? Are people reaching out, or is it about the same as normal? Do we run at a sort of standard level of crisis, whatever's happening?
Well, I think that's a great question. My sense is this: we are always having problems. We always will have problems, you know, and they are very, it's funny. If you look at my inbox, my Dear Sugar inbox, I make these little subfolders. And, you know, it's just we have a pretty standard set of troubles, right? We have love and romance and sex problems. We have parenting problems. We have, you know, problems, you know, with infertility or with dysfunctional families or, you know, boundary setting, all that stuff. There's only a finite number of problems we have. But of course, we experience them all originally. And it is true that problems, specific problems arise in relation to the times. So I wrote the Dear Sugar column for a website called The Rumpus, and those columns were collected in my book, Tiny Beautiful Things. But about this time last year, and then I did a podcast, as I mentioned, with Steve Allman, yep. Dear Sugars. And then now, a little more than a year ago, I decided to restart the Dear Sugar column as a Substack newsletter. So I do one Dear Sugar column a month. And what's been really interesting is, first of all, one of the reasons I restarted the column is that people were writing to me, even though I wasn't at the time, you know, writing the column. They were just like, Dear Sugar, bring the podcast or the column back, please, you know? And so they were writing to me. And you know, it's interesting because, of course, you would think, yeah, this is all about the pandemic. And I certainly have questions that are COVID-related, without question. Mm. But in the United States, and I do have readers all over the world, but my letters from the United States, so many of them were about Trump and about the stress and the turmoil that the really the political divisions that have really become so much more volatile here in the U.S. The impact that was having on people's families, you know, people saying, you know, I love my mom, but she voted for Trump, and how can I, you know, love her, and, you know, all those things. But also then just people feeling like psychologically exhausted from feeling like that they have to, you know, fear for our nation because they're at odds with, you know. So it was really interesting. And that, you know, now that Biden's in, like, those kinds of letters have simmered down.
Have they? So well, that's really good, though.
They have. And now it's like a lot of the COVID stuff. I've had also some interesting letters about COVID because you mentioned that there are some silver linings to this pandemic. And one of the most interesting letters, or a sort of category of interesting letters I've received, are from people who are differently abled in different ways. And the new way that we're communicating and having events and having gatherings, the new way that we're doing so many of those things online has allowed a lot of people, you know, to be included who had been previously excluded. People who could never, you know, travel to some retreat center and take a writing workshop with so-and-so can now register because it's all online, or people can access and communicate in ways. So I think that that's pretty interesting. Like, so one of my favorite letters, which I haven't answered yet, is from a woman who's saying, my life got a lot better because of the new ways we're communicating. And I don't want the pandemic to end. Like, I'm sad people died. And I'm like, she wasn't saying she would.
Yeah,
she was
sure,
glad
yeah.
that. But she was saying, brutal. Can we please not go all the way back to the way it was before? Because I have a better life. Which is pretty interesting, huh?
I agree. And I've heard it a lot from readers of Wintering who write to me and say, like, very similar stuff. Like, actually, during this time, I feel like I've finally had the rest I needed. I've cut down on a social life that, in retrospect, I can now see was destructive. You know, lots of people have stopped drinking, for example, or noticed, like, addiction patterns that were maybe not visible because they were hidden by social life. You know, working from home has given them more time. They've walked more. They've been in more contact with nature. They have spent more time with their kids. And I think there's a huge number of people who either are using this, like, in a really positive way as a springboard to affect change that they probably needed to make for years. But I think lots of other people are feeling a lot of fear at this point that they don't want it to end because the changes have been positive and they don't know how to carry that on into the future.
Right. And yeah, I was just listening on the radio the other day to this story saying, like, basically so many people who had been going to the office 5 days a week now, they're just saying, I won't do that anymore. I'm not going to commute every day. I might commute 1 or 2 days, but the rest of the time I'm going to stay home, which is pretty interesting. I mean, I do think I'll be fascinated to see, you know, 20 years from now, if we'll look back and say, okay, this is when, like, our relationship to employment changed around the globe.
Mm. I mean, I'm a wild optimist and I can't help myself, but I'm excited by a lot of it. You know, I think even the really terrible stuff has maybe been good for us a little bit. Not in like a, oh, you know, there's a silver lining in every cloud, because I hate that stuff, but I'm really grumpy about that stuff. But in the sense that actually it's brought us in contact with death and what death means and the inevitability of it and the sheer monstrous rock face that it actually has always represented in our lives. And I don't think that's a bad thing for us to confront that, because we've been able to avoid looking it in the eye for such a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, we've done some reflection as a society about what life is and how we want to live it. And I really think that's going to express itself in work. And that's why lots of people in government are sounding so anxious about, you know, like trying to get people back into the office. I mean, I don't know if it's the same discourse for you guys, but our prime minister is obsessed with it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, you and I like that. You and I, we have both always, I mean, just reading your book again, like I said, when I read Wintering this time last year, I recognized you as a kindred spirit in a couple of ways, a woman, a mother, you know, all that stuff. But you know, somebody who really finds the glimmer in the darkness, and that there is so much to be. There's so much that grows. We think of like the we need light. You know, we need light to grow, but we also need darkness to flourish. Mm. And there's so many treasures that can be found there. And I do think that part of that is, obviously I write about this all the time, is Dear Sugar. You know, I'm constantly saying like that there are so many important, beautiful lessons we can learn from the dark times, from the dark experiences. I refer my father, who's dead now, he was not a good father. He was an abusive person and a really menacing figure in my life. But I call him my dark teacher. I value what he gave me in his darkness. I wouldn't have asked for it. I didn't want it. I don't wish it upon anyone. And yet I can also acknowledge that it's part of what formed me and made me who I am.
I mean, it seems to me that in a very real sense, you couldn't do what you do now without that incredibly traumatic past that you lived through, like so many different traumas. But without saying, oh, that was fine though, because it's not the same. Instead, the thing is that it lets you go out and give service in a way that is extraordinary, and which obviously, you know, thousands and thousands of people are really not just grateful for, but kind of dependent on, you know, like kind of they need it. And when you stopped that, they felt the lack of it. I mean, that's quite an extraordinary thing to offer to the world, I think.
Thank you.
In beautiful prose, incidentally.
Yeah, you know, when I was younger, and I've always been a political activist and so forth, but when I was younger, I felt like, okay, I'm a writer, but I've got to do all this activism to actually make an impact. And as I've moved into middle age, again, it's all or nothing. I do some activism, but what I've realized is the positive impact I can actually have that does have in the end, I think, political consequences is to write books that make people see themselves and others with more compassion, to see themselves more clearly, to see them to be more honest and transparent about who they are what they want and what they fear. And I think that I know that changes the world, because I've been changed by literature. And I do think that's, you know, that's my contribution. And as far as it, you know, and you're right. It's like it came, I think that some of the, you know, I've had traumatic experiences, and to turn those dark things into things that offer other people light, you know, has been a very powerful act for me. It's been healing to me to do that as well.
Yeah. It deepens our experience of this life. Cheryl, it's so lovely to talk to you. I want to ask one final thing, which is, you know, the classic question, what are you working on at the moment? What are we going to see next from you?
Well, that's another thing. The pandemic, I do a lot of public speaking. I travel, give talks, you know, and suddenly all of that came to a screeching halt, which, you know, I took a financial hit for that, but like, okay, go back to, you know, get back. I mean, it's not that I had stopped writing. I just wasn't you know, I was not writing as much because I was busy doing so many other things. Mm. And what's been really cool is to just have done a lot of new projects during the pandemic. I was hired to write a screenplay. I can't say yet what the screenplay is about, but it's about a it's about a famous woman we all know. She's dead. And I'm right now writing the last revision of that, and it's going to come into the world, and then I'll be able to announce it, I hope. So I've been really learning a new form, which has been really cool. I had written some scripts before, but I was pretty new in that whole world. So I've become a screenwriter over the last year, and
congratulations.
I'm working on my next book. Thank you.
Wow.
And I'm working on my next book, which is a memoir, and really just feeling so much like I got to get it done. It's like way overdue, but I'm trying to do all the mindfulness things and not get freaked out and feel terribly ashamed and full of self-loathing, which is a challenge.
I don't think anyone's been on time with anything this year. I really think it's okay. Like if there's ever been a time when you can be late with stuff, it's now. How can you get stuff done? I don't know. It's hard.
I don't know. Brain fog.
You're going to have to stop blaming brain fog.
But you've got to tell me. See, how do I know? So is it one of those things like how do I know I have brain fog?
I think it's like not being able to kind of access the thoughts that you're meaning to have. Like this kind of, for me, it feels like there's a veil between the front end of my brain and the back end, and I've lost access between them.
So it's like you've had like 3 glasses of wine.
It is. Sometimes it is like being really drunk, like maybe 3 martinis instead, like not just wine. And, you know, that kind of classic middle-aged woman thing of walking into a room and not knowing what you're doing, but kind of writ large. And
right. Okay.
I still get halfway through a sentence and I'm like, oh, I can't remember what I was saying.
Okay.
I've become the world's worst anecdotalist. I am embarrassing at dinner parties now. I start talking, I'm like, oh, it was a book written by this person. I can't remember the person or the book. And actually, like, now I think of it, I don't know what they said. But, oh, it was really interesting. I was dying to tell you about it, guys. You know?
Okay, so maybe I'm the only middle-aged woman who has escaped brain fog.
Well, this is great. This is what you should be writing about. How I did it.
There we go. We've ended up talking about brains a lot for the button, the off button, and then the fog button. We need like a little...
There's an innovation brewing somewhere, isn't there? Oh, if only we could figure it out.
Oh, it's really great to talk to you. And I'm such a fan of your work.
And
we haven't, here we are on the cusp of winter as we talk, right? We're about to officially enter into winter.
It's just begun. Meteorological winter starts today. We're talking on the 1st of December. So this is the day. This is the day it all happens. I'm excited.
Perfect. Me too.
I'm thrilled by it. But I think probably everyone's heard enough of me talking about winter for a while. So I think that's probably okay. I've heard enough of me talking about winter. Cheryl, thank you so, so much. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again really soon.
Yes. Thank you, Catherine. It's such a pleasure to chat with you. I could talk to you for hours. We got to go on a long walk together someday. I hope that happens.
We absolutely have to. We'll have to introduce each other to each other's landscapes. That would be amazing.
Amazing. Mm.
Bit deeper into the woods now. Hopefully I won't see too many more dog walkers. There's so many people about today. It's the time of year when we're all trying to drink in light. My dog is slightly intimidated by the whole thing. All these other doggies running around. I'm really late with all the Christmas stuff this year. Rather foolishly, I've been having some work done on my house. Really needed doing before the bathroom floor fell through. I think I needed to avoid that. But it means that whereas I normally try and have a lovely, quiet December, my December's been really busy and really chaotic. I don't deal well with chaos. I don't deal well with not being able to sit quietly at my desk and be in my own head. That's so important to me.
So it's been quite challenging. And what it means is that I'm late with everything. My tree isn't up. My decorations aren't up. Everything feels very unfestive. But then actually, I'm quite looking forward to getting them all set up late in a way. I know lots of people don't bring their tree in until midwinter or until Christmas Eve. I've always got mine up at the beginning of December to kind of maximise the benefit and justify the effort that it takes. But this year, I'll dress the house for Christmas and we'll have Christmas. And probably take them down again on Twelfth Night. I'm curious about what that'll be like. I sometimes think the feverish build-up to that big celebration is too much. You're exhausted by the time it comes. I know it's true for my son. It's too much for him. Too much for me too. So anyway, I'll let you know how I get on. I want to say a massive thank you to Cheryl. As you could tell, I really enjoyed that conversation. Hope I didn't sound too much like a fangirl, trying to be like a grown-up on the podcast. But it was great to talk. And if you haven't come across all of her many wonderful presences online, you've been missing out, and there are links in the show notes. And do read Wild. It's brilliant. I've yet to watch the film. I didn't want to because I love the book so much. I was worried it would spoil it for me, but I hear it's very good. Maybe we need a watch-along in the Patreon community. That could be quite fun, actually. I will make that happen. Thank you, too, to my producer, Buddy Peace, who also composed the lovely theme music and who puts up with a lot of to-ing and fro-ing from me while I misrecord introductions and things like that. And thanks to Megan Hutchins, who holds the whole thing together. Not just the show, but most of my life, it seems. And thank you for listening. If you love the podcast, do check out the Patreon link. I would love to build a really strong community there. We're having fun already. And you get a little bit extra from me should you enjoy ramblings like this. Take care, everyone. Keep warm. There'll be a new podcast in just a couple of weeks. And I'll see you then. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.